Ladies and gentlemen, podcasting since 2005, you're listening to Gamertag Radio with your host, podcaster Hall of Famer Danny Pena, the always opinionated Paris Lilly, and from outside of the norm, Peter Toledo. This is Gamertag Radio.
And welcome to a new episode of Gamertag Radio, episode 1123. 1123, my God, I cannot believe there's so many episodes of this show. But I am Paris, and I'm joined by Pete.
What's up? How you doing?
No, I'm good, man. Danny is frolicking through South Florida right now, so he will not be on this episode. But wish him well. Looks like he's having a lot of fun, so... always happy to see that. But yeah, I'm good, man. Good. It's been a good week. A lot of video game stuff, a lot of real life stuff. I'm getting ready for my annual audit that I do at my job that usually it's ironic. I changed it so it wouldn't happen during E3 anymore. Cause if you remember the last couple E3s, I'd always be scrambling, trying to go. And then of course the pandemic happened. So none of that matters. So. but everything's been good, man. How about everything in your world? How's stuff going?
Doing really well. Things here in Switzerland, in Europe in general, is starting to lighten up a little bit. Overall, from living here, you can just feel the easing of the stresses of the last year coming down. And then just from a professional, standpoint, it's like the last year was probably not the best thing for someone, just trying to get acclimated to a new environment. Yeah. And then, now it's just, everything is starting to really, really ramp up back to 150 miles an hour. And I'm just trying to hold on right now, but it's a good thing. Cause when you're busy and you're moving nonstop, just time flies. Right. So looking forward to it. Just from being in the travel industry now, that means travel is opening up now, which means I can start going elsewhere. New York is going to be a busy thing for me. And other countries very, very soon. And that's the most important. That's the most exciting part. And I'm also dealing with a daughter that's going away to college in 4 months.
Hey, well, we're obviously in the same age bracket, kids and everything. I feel you, man. You know, it's crazy. Trey is going to be 15.
That's insane. That's insane.
And the reason I bring that up is Trey actually mirrors my quote unquote time in the gaming industry, right? Because he was born 2 months before I started Uncle Gamer. Wow. So when you think about that timeline, you even think about GTR. So that was basically, he was born. That is around the time I saw Danny Pena and Chris Palladino at a gaming event in at Redmond for Lord of the Rings and go, hey, I want to do this too. And I reached out, wound up starting, well, then it was the Old School Gamers, which was terrible. But then, basically I started Uncle Gamer and just everything from there. And it's just so funny because, I've been talking recently about Halo Infinite and multiplayer and the fact that 343 isn't trying to get me to play it. They're trying to get my kids. And more specifically, I think about Trey because Trey has grown up not caring about Halo. He's never cared about Halo. He as a little, as a little kid, little baby, would love the Halo 3 trailer, but he never played Halo. He never interacted with it. So it's never been a thing for him. So I just think about that. And then when I think, wait, he's 15. My God. That's what I mean. So that was 15 years ago. It's just crazy when you think about just how time flies and just everything that has happened just, between the three of us, man, just life and, family, the kids. And like you said, you got two that are now basically quote unquote adults, going off into the world. My oldest, she's in college now. Hell, she's going to be 20 at the end of this year. I can't wrap my head around this stuff. Look, I don't feel that old, but I am that old, I guess. It's just wild, man.
Staying with the Halo stuff, have you tried to go back and play co-op with Trey going through the Halo, the Halo trilogy.
He doesn't care. Yes. He says no. He's like, eh, I don't care. And that's kind of just been my whole point with Halo Infinite coming out. They don't have to convince me. They got to convince the next generation. Because what do they play? They're playing Fortnite. They're playing Apex. They're playing Warzone, right? They're playing that stuff. Wow. They're not playing Halo.
And like, they don't care.
Like, Trey doesn't even, yeah, and they don't care. They don't feel like they're missing anything. Halo is old people games to them. They don't, that doesn't register them. So,
oh my God.
I just think it's fascinating when we get to June when they do the new unveil,
right,
of Halo Infinite, and they start showing off the multiplayer, what it's going to be. I'm fascinated to see what are they going to do with Halo multiplayer to get the Fortnite and Apex crowd to want to play it. I'm fascinated. I mean, obviously free to play is a big component to it, but they can't just do traditional Halo,
right,
multiplayer. That's not going to be enough. They got to do something different. So that's going to be real interesting to see.
Yeah, we old.
Yeah, I know, we're old.
We're old.
But like I said, this is Gamertag Radio, episode 1123, and we're brought to you by Shaq Eyegear. And if you're watching this live on twitch.tv/Gamertag Radio, you will see that I am wearing my Shaq Eyegear glasses. I love them. I wear them whenever I'm playing anything gaming wise. They're fantastic. They're very comfortable. They cut out that blue light. They do the job of what gaming glasses are supposed to do. Danny wears them as well. They're fantastic. Pete, yours are on the way. And I am happy to announce we will soon be doing a giveaway here on Gamertag Radio so that you can also win your own pair of Shaq Eyegear glasses. And if you don't win a pair or you don't have the patience to wait, I recommend that everyone go to shaqeyegear.com/GTR and you can get your own pair of Shaq Eyegear glasses. And make sure you use our code GTR and you can get 10% off. Again, that is shaqeyegear.com.
Send us your feedback or questions. Give us a call at 786-273-7GTR. Email us at fanmail@gamertagradio.com or leave a message on speakpipe.com/gamertagradio.
So, on to the show. First topic I wanted to bring up is Returnal. So, last episode, I did a review with Danny on Returnal. To me, it is definitely a Game of the Year contender for sure. It is a rogue-like game, which means you will go through one life, get as far as you can. You're going to die, and trust me, you're going to die a lot, and then you're going to start over from the beginning. You'll keep a few aspects, but for the most part, you're starting from scratch. And that is very important because, you know, we tried to warn you, tried to warn some people out there about this, that this is not an easy game. It is difficult. It is, again, a roguelike. So you have to be into that type of genre. But from that aspect, Housemarque has knocked it out of the park in that this is a high production AAA experience. Yes, there's been a couple bugs here or there, but some of the scuttlebutt that I've seen in the community already has been, well, why can't I save? I want to save. And Housemarque has even hinted they potentially could be putting a mid-save point into the game, which personally I'm against because that defeats the purpose of a roguelike game. But here nor there, that may happen. The other part of this that I've seen is it's beginning review bombed because, you know, people tend to want to tie their own self-worth to these pieces of plastic. So the fact that it's a PlayStation exclusive, I guess you have the quote unquote Xbox people, you know, going in and review bombing the game. Look, no game is perfect. I understand. No, I'm not saying it should be a 10 or whatever, but to give it, you know, zeros and ones and twos and all that, I mean, that's silly. Because the game is, again, it's a great game for what it is. I'm not saying it has to be your favorite game. It doesn't have to be your game of the year. But for people that are into that genre, absolutely. It will be talked about again at the end of this year, 100%. But it's unfortunate to see all this review bombing stuff that's been happening. And Pete, I just kind of want to throw it to you because I actually have no idea if you've been paying attention to Returnal or seen anything, because I know you don't have a PlayStation 5 right yet. So I know you haven't played it. But Just any of your thoughts kind of on the outside looking in about Returnal and just everything you've seen so far?
Well, the fact that it harkens back to games that we played, you know, as old fuddle duds here back in the day,
exactly.
We didn't have the option many times for saving. And a lot of times it was, you played it, you plugged it in and you paused it and you put it in your drawer so it didn't turn off or anything, or your mom didn't come in and shut it off not knowing that you were trying to save a level or trying to save progress because you couldn't go back. I love it. I think it's fantastic that developers are trying to keep to some of those early roots that we as gamers, you know, we as, you know, early game, you know, early age gamers. Wow, that's a new term now. We're early age gamers. It sounds better than old gamers. So I think I'm going to stick with that. But our generation of gamers, we're used to that, right? We're accustomed to games where you don't have a save point, right? And I love that developers are trying to, you know, it doesn't have to be in every game, and it may not fit in every game, but in games such as Returnal, it makes sense, right?
Yes.
So I like that. Now the fact that Housemarque is now starting to listen to the community, that all right, maybe we can give you, you know, we can find a way to maybe sneak in a save point somewhere. So, you know, busy folks like you and I who are fortunate enough to have jobs and, you know, we're busy for 8-10 hours of the day, we can turn it off and come back. I think that's cool, but I think it may take away from the core, you know, the core play style of the game, right? That's how they developed. That's how they, you know, decided from the day one that this is how it's going to happen. You know, and yeah, I mean, something happens, whether you're at work, you know, you're working from home, the boss calls you, damn, you gotta pause it, you gotta put it away. You know, or you're at lunch at work, or, you know, you're just, life happens, right? So you should be able to pause it. But if it's going to interrupt or halt the way the game was designed to play, I think they should just leave it and let people deal with the repercussions. It is what it is. Agreed. You know, if it happens, it happens. You know, you just start over and you deal with it. I mean, it's not like this is, you know, something that just came out of the blue as the first time and all of a sudden now, you know, it's causing a ruckus. No, it's not the first time we've heard of games like this. You know, that's how the developer wanted you to experience the game. So I think they should just leave it as is and let players, you know, just make their, wake up early, you know, set the coffee, put the kids, you know, set up their cereal. So when they wake up, it's ready to go and sit on the couch and you play your game the way it was designed to play. I think that's how it should be.
Completely agree. And that's the thing why I say I'm hesitant that, all right, if they start adding a save feature in there, that kind of breaks the original vision of what they were attempting to accomplish with the difficulty of the game and the experience that they want you to go through. But I also do see your point, you know, as far as, you know, us older gentlemen that like to play games that have other things we need to do may not necessarily have the time sink we're able to put in to do a complete run. Because here's the thing, and I've not completed it yet. I'm in the fourth biome, by the way, for people that may or may not care. There's six of them. But someone like, I know Khalif has beaten it. Blessing has beaten it. You're literally doing an entire, like, you're going from start to finish. You have to do an entire run completely to finish the game. That's just simply how it works. I guess I'm okay with that, but I get that not everyone can do that. And then that's when you bring in, you have game $70, you know, so is it worth your $70? You know, you have to do this time commitment. It's super difficult. I get all that. But none of that, in my opinion, excuses the review bombing that we've seen so far. It's literally just a childish prank that we see now, that people will, I don't get my way, so I'm going to purposely give this a bad score. Because the way that our current system works right now, this is hurting the development team potentially on bonuses and things like that, if it gets a lower Metacritic score than what it truly should have. I mean, you know, I'd said this yesterday, you know, just on social media, but all a review is an opinion. That's it. I don't think, I think the practice of us tying review scores, putting scores to reviews is as old as us, right? So, I mean, I almost feel like, why are we doing that? Give your opinion. That's all it is. It's one person's opinion. You kind of can use it as a guide on your purchase decision. Not it shouldn't be tied into developers that have been working on this game for 3, 4, 5, 6 years, and all of a sudden a score comes out and it's not meaning whatever, you know, the publisher or whoever, the studio head says the score should be. Now you don't get as big a bonus as you should. I think that's ridiculous, but I don't know. I mean, just overall, I think the game is fantastic. Like I said on the last episode, I do think it's a game of the year contender. You know, Housemarque, you know, has knocked it out of the park. Just like I said, the way that it's using the DualSense controller, the way that it's using the 3D audio, to me, this is the first complete package of that we've seen on the PlayStation 5 that utilizes everything, you know, that the PlayStation 5 experience has to offer. And, you know, like I said, $70 isn't cheap. So, you know, you have to make that decision on your own. But if you do decide to pick it up, I think you'll have a great time with it.
I'm hoping to that moment where a game taps me on the shoulder and says, Pete, go get a PS5. I know we're going to talk about one later in the show, and I think that might be the one that does it. But I'm hoping if there's a game that does come out in the next couple of months that forces me to go out and buy a PS5, then I think it'll be, I think this will be the type of game that I'll go pick up, right? Because games like this, they're a new thing for me, right? Starting with games like, I'll just say my game of the year from last year, Hades. That took me by surprise. I didn't think I was going to spend as much time as I have on that game as I did. And I think this is one of those titles that if I haven't gone out and gotten it already, that the day that I do pick up, this is going to be one of those titles that I pick up. And I can just lounge on the couch and disappear for 5 or 6 hours and do what I can try to do and try to beat it. But I like games like that. So
yeah, and I have not played Hades as an example. Yeah, I haven't played it. And again, this is in that genre. That's why I was even saying last time, this might even be the kind of game that gets me into wanting to play more roguelikes, which I know, you know, Hades, obviously. Dead Cells is another one I've not, you know, put any time to. As an example, I think the last one that I really, you know, sunk any true time into was Rogue Legacy, which ironically enough, I think they're about to bring out a sequel to that. So definitely keep my eyes open on that. But moving on. So sticking with the PlayStation, let's talk about Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart. So they had the State of Play this week. What was it, about 20 minutes or so? But they had gameplay. this is about as close to Pixar as we've gotten in a game. Insomniac, what they've done with this game is just from a visual standpoint, obviously going through that new gameplay and just talking about how it's going to, again, utilize the DualSense, how it's going to utilize 3D audio. I mean, wow. I mean, you talk about day one. that is a no-brainer, day one. And not to mention, hey, it's Ratchet & Clank, which obviously is awesome in its own right. But I'm curious if you got to see some of the gameplay on it, what your thoughts are.
I have, and just like we were talking just a few moments ago, if there is a game that forces me to now start looking at nefarious means at finding a PS5 for the household, there it is, right? I was hoping to be able to hold out as much as possible. You know, obviously now with Sony, you know, with its ability to now release its catalog out on PC and giving, you know, PC players an opportunity to explore that amazing catalog of games that they have. Man, if you're looking at the background of the Twitch stream, you see it, you know, damn it. Damn it. I need to play Ratchet and Clank. It's definitely going to be one of those titles that's going to definitely push and sell product as if Sony has difficulty with that already. And yeah, I count me in. I have to start looking at finding a PS5.
Yeah, look, I ain't going to tell you how to spend your bread. I'm not going to tell anyone how to spend their bread. That is clearly up to you. It is unfortunate that it is still very hard to get a PlayStation 5, because to me, this, and it's so funny, people get mad at me. I'd said this a few months ago, and it turns out I was wrong because of Returnal, but I still stand by what I say. This is the game to get a PlayStation 5. It's going to be, absolutely. Look, because again, when you talk about Returnal, isn't necessarily going to be for everyone because of the roguelike. Look, just from a production standpoint, yes, it completely highlights everything the PlayStation 5 does. But so will Ratchet & Clank. And Ratchet & Clank obviously is going to be a lot, It's going to be more accessible to a wider audience, right? Not to mention, I don't know if you saw the accessibility features that they showed at the end, which again is great. They're going to make it so everyone can pick this game up and be able to play it, which is fantastic. And shout out to Jennifer Hale, by the way, which AKA Fem Shep, killing it as Rivet. I mean, the fact, like, I'm just talking about her talent as a voice actress. You'd have no idea that was Jennifer Hale. And I'm like, wow, she's really, really good. I mean, she really caught that inflection of this. I guess almost like this cartoonish character. Like I said, it wasn't like, oh, this sounds like an old adult, you know, voice actor. It was like, no, you almost thought it was a kid talking, right? But no, that's Jennifer Hale doing that. So yeah, it was great. So I'm really excited for it. I like that they're doing the multiple dimensions. It has that kind of quote unquote multiverse feel to it, because there's a different version of Dr. Nefarious is in this. Obviously Rivet is a playoff of Ratchet. Here's the bigger question though. Is there another Clank? Because there's been no hint at that. In
has
that.
To be
so,
one for each.
Yeah. So are we going to get a Clink? So to speak, right? You know, so I'm really excited for it. I just, man, it's beautiful. The way, like I said, the way they were describing how the DualSense is going to work in it excites me a lot as well, just to see, because again, I know you have a PlayStation 5, but like even playing Returnal, the way like you can literally feel the raindrops, individual raindrop. Yeah, yeah, dude, it's insane the way that they're doing that. So I'm excited to see, you know, obviously how Insomniac is going to do that as well. So, you know, June 11th is going to be here before you know it. We're already in May. And I mean, we're pretty much, what, 5-6 weeks away. Mm-hmm. And that game's going to be out, ironically, right before digital E3 starts. But I'm excited for it, man. Really looking forward to it. Like I said, it's going to be a day one thing. And if you're watching or listening to this and you've not checked out that PlayStation State of Play, highly recommend you go do it. Check out that extended gameplay footage they have. I mean, it looks beautiful. Not to mention the weapons look dope, too. I can't wait to play it. It's going to be so good. But moving on here. So I want to look, we started off in PlayStation. So now I want to switch this over to Xbox land. It came out on Xbox Wire a couple days ago. Matt Booty, who is the head of Xbox Game Studios, penned a story talking about their venture in here. I want to make sure I get the title right here. Actually, I thought I had it up and I don't have it up. Oh, well. Anyways, he's talking about basically Xbox's PC initiatives in 2021 and beyond. And the big takeaway from all of this is a few things. First and foremost, just on the PC side, they're going to be catering their games to have PC-specific experiences, widescreen support, obviously DirectX 12. They're making sure the devs get the proper tools they need to make these games catered to PC gamers, right? Like I said, ultra-wide support's coming in. They're going to add in auto HDR, so some legacy titles, the way that they're doing it right now on console, they're going to bring that experience over to PC. I think one of the bigger ones, which a lot of people have been talking about, is cross progression, cross play is going to become a standard across the Xbox Game Studios suite for all their multiplayer stuff. And what is the highlight of that? Of course, it's going to be Halo Infinite, which I know got a lot of people excited. And I guess it's, in a way, I just assume this already, but it's good to see them confirm it. Of course, they're going to have cross progression. I mean, they're making a big push with the multiplayer being free to play. So that basically means no matter if you play it on console, no matter if you play it on PC, no matter if you play it streaming via the cloud, all your progression is going to follow you. You'll have cross play across basically all three platforms, which is great. They want everyone playing this game. And that's the whole point of having it free to play, because, you know, kind of like we hinted at the top, It's not about me. It's about getting my kids at this point. It's about capturing that PC crowd. It also came out that the Master Chief Collection has 10 million players, I guess, across the board playing it now, which, again, just kind of shows you, you know, Halo, you know, they're trying to build this community. They want the engagement in there. And like I said, we'll see in June when they do the full reveal here what all of that looks like. But I'm curious, Pete, if you saw any of the information, what are your thoughts on all that?
I love the fact that they're sticking to their guns with the no one gets left behind, right? Xbox One owners will meet, you know, they won't be cut off from any of these game studios titles that come out. All Xbox game studios obviously will launch on Game Pass. So that just adds more value day one to that whole to that subscription service.
Yep.
And like you said, cross gen, you know, for the first year after Xbox Series X release, that is huge. That is big. That allows whether you're still, you know, on an Xbox One or you're on an Xbox Series S or X or PC, you get to play with everybody. And that's what we've all wanted for so long. So I think it's fantastic that they're embracing that. You know, obviously you got 15 studios now in general. Is that correct? Trying to go back.
What, their studios?
Yeah.
23.
It's 23 total studios. Okay.
With Bethesda now, it's 23.
Okay. Yep. Yeah. All right. And so just the fact that, and the reason, because I see the quote now, it's just the way Matt Booty phrased it was that we have this amazing collection of 15 studio leaders. And if we're always acquiring new things, and there will always be somebody who's the new person. So you always have the older studios and the newer studios. What you don't get in that situation is them treating each other as peers and sharing information or expertise. That's the one thing that we don't commonly see in general in software development. Everybody tries to like corral and fence in their environment, right? But having this ability to basically, it's almost like GitHub for Xbox games, right? So everybody's got this breadth and wealth of knowledge, especially now that you've got Bethesda coming in. So now they're sharing that information, sharing that knowledge, and how do you make this engine better? And how do we make these, how do we process or create these games in a better format or a better process so that, you know, maybe iterations or updates don't take as long. Maybe we don't have to do what happened, you know, what plagued Activision for Call of Duty for a year and a half, which was, oh, you just have to re-download the whole game, which they finally fixed now, right, as of the last update. But now you've got little things like that that can just make every studio better, and that just makes the Microsoft overall catalog of developers and just platforms. It just makes them better. And that's ultimately what is going to now push Sony to do bigger and better things. Maybe not Nintendo, because Nintendo always sits off on their side and just does what Nintendo does. But again, at the end of the day, all of this ends up benefiting us as the gamer, as the consumer, right? So we've praised them for their good. We've criticized them for their bad. And these are the steps that these software houses have to start taking in order to start making bigger, better experiences for us as the gamers. And hopefully it actually translates to those when they come out.
Yeah, completely agree everything you're saying. And it's more of a thing of Xbox is clearly playing the long game here. And, you know, we've talked about this for years at this point, because we could see the ramp up of services and just the direction that they're going. And I feel like we're really on the cusp of this. It's no longer about the console for them. They've gone beyond the console to where the console is just one aspect of their overall strategy. They're trying to bring the games to where you are on the platforms that you want to play them on. And they're trying to cater those experiences to that platform. So like we're talking about the PC right now, they're trying to make the games that they're putting out will have PC specific experience things, you know, to cater to that audience, right? But they're also doing that with cloud as well, when you think about it, with the touch controls, things like that. They're trying to make these games as accessible as possible, no matter what you pick up to play it on, right? And that's great, just overall as gaming. And like you're saying, it leads to more competition, which means, hey, play, look, Nintendo, but PlayStation will do something because of this, because it's competition. And we're the ones that ultimately benefit out of all of this, which is great. Now, the other part of this that came out just in what Matt Booty was talking about initially was just that also with the Xbox or the Windows Store, they're going to cut their fees to match the Epic Game Store to 88%. So basically 12% down from 30, which is great. Again, look, I'm not a fan of the Xbox app. I've talked about this multiple times. It still needs a lot of work, a lot. But again, this is the long game. These are the steps that you try to take that as they iterate on the Xbox app and the Windows Store, ultimately, they do want to make it a competitor to Steam, to where you're not necessarily thinking you have to go to Steam to get all your games. Maybe you do start getting them directly through the Windows Store or the Xbox app. Look, I don't think that's happening anytime soon, but they're working towards it. And that's the point. They're showing a commitment to the PC side of gaming. And let's see how this all plays out. Now, we also saw breaking news that Tom Warren from The Verge, they acquired some documents, I guess, from January, because, again, this goes into Epic and the Apple, the whole Apple Store thing and all this court stuff going on, Microsoft being called as a witness. I guess someone got a hold of documents that showed at some point Microsoft was also considering slashing to that 12% cut on the console, which is kind of unprecedented because it has just pretty much been industry standard. It's 30%. And what this means is, you know, when your third party games show up on the console, Xbox gets a 30% cut of that. PlayStation gets a 30% cut, Nintendo, etc. What Microsoft is saying, well, no, we won't take the full 30%. We'll only take 12%. But then I guess a Microsoft rep said that, hey, they have no plans of doing anything like that soon, blah, 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 blah. That doesn't mean they won't do it. That just means they're not ready to announce it yet. But we'll see again. Who knows? Maybe they course corrected and are not going to do anything like that. But I am curious your thoughts on that, Pete, because to me, if, again, we're saying if, I'm not saying this is happening, if that were to happen, what does that mean from a third-party standpoint? Do you think that would incentivize more third parties just wanting to put their games on Xbox versus, like in other words, they're still going to put them on all, right? But would that encourage third parties to market more of their games to, hey, go pick it up on Xbox because they get a bigger cut? What do you think?
I mean, we know that, and I think Tom Warren also noted this yesterday or the day before that Microsoft has been silently in the background supporting Epic's whole fight against Apple. So by doing this, it helps align them to what Epic is doing. There's two things that kind of like send the light bulb off in my head. First and foremost, by aligning with Epic, do you think that because Epic already has a launcher, they may leverage that as a way to distribute Microsoft games? The second thing was Bethesda has a launcher as well for their games catalog. Why not just have Microsoft leverage that as a back end for distributing its games? Maybe it doesn't, maybe it does, maybe it doesn't tie into the Microsoft store. I don't know. I wouldn't know how that works. It's something that just came into my mind as we were talking about. But I mean, you look at the business model in general for game consoles, it's very, very different for PCs and phones. So there's a lot of legality. There's a lot of, you know, rules and regulations that you got to do. So I don't know if that's something that you're going to do. But I think at the end of the day, that makes the Microsoft Game Store, whether it's going to be an exclusive, a time exclusive, or it's going to be a shared property, that makes it a very, very palatable platform for developers to release their game, especially now that they're going to be able to say, okay, well, you know, we could also push it to xCloud. We have, you know, we can tap into that extremely the platform base that everybody wants to hit at the end of the day. Whether we as gamers choose to want to play on a mobile phone, by doing that, you're tapping into the largest subscriber base in general. Because think about it, you can add all your Xboxes and PlayStations and Nintendo Switches or Wiis, and you still don't total up to the total amount of mobile devices out there in the world. So if you think about it if you think about it in that regard, if you can put your IP on all of the on every single potentially every single device in the world. And I'm not saying it's going to, because maybe, you know, not everybody, you know, like my dad, he's not going to put on a micro, he's not going to put on the Xbox app or whatever to play games. But if you put that potentially out there and somebody just scrolls through and says, oh, look, I can play game X on my phone. Let me try it. And then all of a sudden, boom, you now have that one other person who may have never, ever touched an Xbox in his life. But now you have that one person who you now have the ability to tap into as part of your ecosystem. And at the end of the day, I think that's what Microsoft is doing. So put your IP or put your games on as many pieces of plastic, whether it's a phone or a game console or a PC, and just flood the masses, right? And I think that is what the direction that Phil and everybody else over at Microsoft and Xbox, I think that's what they're doing. The game launcher conversation, I know you just mentioned it. I'm not a fan of the Microsoft Store on my PC, and I think, you know, and that's why we play games on GOG. That's why we use things like GOG. Yeah. But for people who don't want to do that, people who want to keep, you know, they want to keep all of their game launchers separately, leverage that existing technology. Now, if you're gonna support Epic and you want to have that conversation, they may not do it with Epic, because then you got to give a point or two to Epic just to support it to have games on their, you know, on their launcher. But you already have Bethesda as your game as an in-house studio. Leverage that launcher for your gaming side. I think it makes sense.
You're listening to Gamertag Radio.
Well, today's show is once again sponsored by StrongVPN. You know, Paris, both of us being in IT, it's very coincidental that we get to speak about internet security and VPNs for the show. And especially in today's current climate, we've seen an alarming trend regarding data privacy. So what is StrongVPN? Well, VPNs help you safely browse the internet. And whether you're watching a Twitch stream, gaming, or spending way too much time on social media, with StrongVPN, your connection is completely encrypted. And that's important because it means that no one else can spy on what you're doing. You can use StrongVPN on your computers, tablets, mobiles. You can even install it on your home router to protect every device in your household. And the best news, StrongVPN uses the latest generation VPN technology called WireGuard, which means it doesn't slow down your connection like other VPN providers. For listeners of the show, StrongVPN is offering an incredible 65% off. That's just $3.50 for the first month or $27.99 for the entire year. Here's everything you get. You get apps for your iOS, Android, macOS, Windows devices, access to almost 1,000 VPN servers around the world, none of which log your information, which is very, very important, and more than 59,000 anonymous IP addresses protecting your personal privacy. So go to strongvpn.com/GTR and claim your 65% savings. They've got plans, like I said, starting at $3.50, or you can go the whole year and just for $27.99. So get started with this limited time offer and save 65% off monthly and annual subscriptions by visiting strongvpn.com/GTR. Once again, that's strongvpn.com/GTR to save 65%.
This is Gamertag Radio. Voicemail at 786-2737-GTR.
No, same. I think it makes a lot of sense as well. And again, it just goes to what you're saying their overall strategy is. They're trying to reach everybody. And what's the most common device everyone has? It's going to be that mobile device, right? So this is why you see cloud gaming. That's why they're curating their quote unquote Xbox app. You know, we obviously see they're doing a shortcut with the browser cloud streaming on iOS, but the whole point is they want to make sure the games are everywhere you are and you get to decide which platform you want to play them on. This is why you have an Xbox Game Pass with a subscription service, because it makes sense. It gives people discoverability on their games. It gives them options to be able to consume, you know, different types of content. Excuse me. And, that in turn, you know, creates more engagement. We've already seen some of those numbers start to come out with Game Pass. So look, it to me, all of it's exciting. I like to see cool new stuff. I like to see different things. This is why, you know, I talk about Game Pass a lot. And, you know, certain people might get upset when I say it, but I don't care. And because I do think it is going to be the future of how we consume games across multiple platforms, not just a cloud, because somehow that narrative got twisted on social media. Cloud is only one part of it. I'm not saying the cloud is replacing the way we play games today. That's silly. That ain't happening. But yeah, it's all going to be interesting to see. I'm excited for it, and we'll have to see how it all plays out. And again, the summer event is probably going to continue to tell that tale as we go into E3. So Pete, there's a couple different rumors that have come out here over the past few days, and shout out to Jez Corden over at Windows Central, because I swear to God, he's like the key master. He knows, he has everything. He knows everything. He's sitting on all these secrets. But Jez, Mr. Maddie Plays, shout out to Rand as well. I always say his name wrong, but Killabride, I believe that's how you say it. He posts a lot on social media and on Reset Era, but he definitely, you know, has some inside knowledge. But the reason I bring all those names up, just the culmination of all those gentlemen. Excuse me. First one is IO Interactive. It's looking like IO Interactive Hitman. They're making the James Bond game. Looks like they're also making an Xbox exclusive title that is going to be potentially an RPG and something to do with dragons. Have you seen that, Pete?
I saw it. I tried to dig in and I didn't get a chance to go all in, but I did see the initial post where they were talking about that. And I'm curious. What was the game that they tried to come out with a year and a half ago?
Scalebound. Oh no, not that.
It might have been Scalebound. But do you?
The reason I said Scalebound, they've already debunked that one. They say it's not Scalebound.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah, I did. Hearing that and then thinking of Scalebound, I definitely thought that that maybe IO Interactive had gotten a chance to maybe tap into the source code, maybe gotten permission to do something like that. I think that'd be fantastic. But alas, it is not to be, but I am curious what they can do, because they've got a very, very strong track record with regards to games. And I'm interested. I'm interested. We saw what they've done with Hitman 3. They've brought that back as an actual, you know, viable title. They just, I think they just opened a studio in Spain, in Barcelona. So
something like that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, think about it. You open up a brand new studio. I mean, you gotta man it and you gotta do something in there. So I'm very curious and interested in seeing what's gonna happen out of that. And, you know, I mean, Spain is just a few hours to the west for me, you know? So if,
right, that's right.
Hey, You want some coverage, you know, I'd be more than happy to stop on by, knock on some doors and talk to some people.
Yes, please do. No, but yeah, being serious for a second. Yeah, I'm very curious and interested to see what this will look like. Will we even hear about it this year at this E3 event? But, you know, Jez even more specifically has hinted, this is something he had been hinting at for a while, and now other people are kind of corroborating it. And but there's also a second one as well that's potentially being worked on that Microsoft is partnering up with to create a title. We just simply don't know what it is. But I think the one thing that we can all agree, no matter what these games are, no matter how far out they will be, they're going to be day one on Game Pass, because that's, again, the overall strategy that they have. So, it's going to be fascinating to see what this turns out to be. Again, coming from IO Interactive, we know them for Hitman. Like, when obviously they got James Bond, we're like, no brainer. Of course they should be making James Bond. They're perfect for this. But them delving into fantasy RPG, something with dragons, that's not something we've seen from that studio. So it'll be exciting to see what it turns out to be. So really looking forward to that.
Yeah, the more I look into that real quick, I digging into it. The studio is in Sweden, which is not the one that they just opened in Barcelona. So it's going to be outside of that office. So who knows? Maybe we're looking at a second IO Interactive game that's going to be developed in tandem along with this new Project Dragon game that they're working on.
Yep, sounds about what's going to happen here. They'll do something in tandem. I wouldn't expect to see this game anytime soon. But we'll see. They might tease it. You never know. So moving on, staying in Xbox Rumorville, Forza Horizon 5, which seems to be the worst kept secret in the industry at this point. Everyone is expecting that game to come out this year. But now it's starting to look like this. We know the location and it looks to be Mexico. Mm-hmm. Kind of excites me. We don't see a lot of games take place in Mexico, Central America. And I think that's a fantastic location. I think there's some unique things they can do with that, you know, just from the culture aspect, obviously just the visuals, everything that we'll see. So I'm pretty excited about it. I truly hope this rumor is true. I hope we do see it at E3 this year. But I am curious your thoughts on that. What do you think about this rumor?
I mean, at the end of the day, we always got to take these with a grain of salt, right? I mean, there were previous leaks, you know, in the past that suggested it would be in Japan. So is it Japan? Is it Mexico? Is it both? Are we looking at another, as opposed to just a localized game setting? Maybe we're looking at, you know, if the leaks are, you know, are to be believed, I mean, maybe we're looking at a more international style release from Playground Games, right? I think it'd be fantastic, an opportunity to maybe follow in what F1 does, and you know, or maybe Drift style, where they go to different, you know, they go to different countries, you know, they go to Mexico, they go to Japan. But I think doing it in Mexico opens up that entire Central American, and then maybe even into South America, just as a whole, you know, land-based, you know, racing game, you know, high speed, you're going at very fast. So you're going to go through Mexico, you're going to go through Costa Rica, you're going to go through Ecuador, Nicaragua, Mexico, cross over the Panama Canal, boom, you're into South America. Now you're able to hit all of those other land masses. So it could be possible. But again, my concern is because we saw the leaks in the past that said Japan, and now they're saying it's in Mexico. Maybe these are just red herrings and throwing everybody off until they actually release it and it actually surprises us. So I don't know. I that'd be really cool. I think it's fantastic. I think it'd be great, especially for the Latinx community to finally have a game, mm-hmm. you know, that sits on our side, you know, for mi gente. And I think that'd be great. So we'll see. Be very, very interesting.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you leaned right into why it excites me. Again, we need more diversity in these games. We need to show off different locations and cultures that we typically don't see, you know, in the gaming world. So you're opening some eyes, you're giving people a different perspective on things. So that's why it excites me more than anything. I think it will give us a different look at something we normally don't see. Like, ironically enough, remember, you know, years ago when we went to Ubisoft Paris to go see Ghost Recon Wildlands.
Yes.
And that was in Bolivia. And just even through that process of, you know, we're talking to the devs and it went on location and they're showing off that different cult. It's like, we need more of that. Right. So, yeah, if we're getting another game that's going to do something like that, I'll be excited to see it for sure. So sticking again in Xbox Rumorville, the other one is Starfield. And I've actually really wanted to talk to you about this, Pete, because I have no idea your thoughts or just where you sit with this. So, again, Starfield is another one that everyone's been talking about. You know, at this point, everyone pretty much assumes it's going to be an Xbox exclusive. I think if it wasn't, we would have heard so by now. But the point I'm bringing this one up is there's been a lot of speculation here in the last couple weeks that not only will we see it at E3 this year, but it's going to come out this year. I stand by the stance that with COVID-19, there's no rules. We simply just do not know. It very well could come out this year. But if it is not ready, if Todd Howard needs more time, I can almost guarantee you Phil Spencer and those guys are going to give them the time they need. I personally think Q1 2022, kind of like Oblivion, a March 2022 release makes more sense to me at this point. But I guess like something like stuff Mr. Matty Plays has been talking about, really the game was supposed to come out last year and COVID delayed it from last year. It's almost like a Halo situation with Starfield, where it would have come out last year if it wasn't for COVID-19. And they're taking, we're going to delay it an entire year. You know, obviously the bug fixes, QA, just everyone working remote and all that, but it's going to be ready to go the end of this year. So they'll show it at E3 this year. Todd Howard will probably do an extended demo for it. And then they'll say, and it's out in October 23rd, 2021 or whatever they say. So I want to throw it to you because, number one, I have no idea your interest in Starfield. Have you been keeping up with this? But do you think they even need to, I'm saying this from a Microsoft standpoint, Xbox standpoint, with Halo coming this year, do they even need to bring out Starfield this year, or should they just take more time?
If you, and first we'll look at it from the Bethesda side of things. I am hesitant because I don't trust Todd Howard. Fallout 76 is proof of that.
Right, because they arrested. Yeah. We're in a post Cyberpunk 2077 world. So I think a lot of people have taken lessons learned from that.
Exactly. But exactly. Those two games are very, very fresh on the minds of many gamers. And the last thing, and remember, it just works. That was the phrase from Todd. It just works.
Yep.
It didn't. Yep. And we know that. It didn't work for the first couple of months until they finally fixed it. I mean, hell, if we're looking at talking about Cyberpunk as well, it's still not 100%. It took a year plus for Fallout 76 to finally get its legs. And we're starting to see that from a lot of these big games. I mean, we saw that from No Man's Sky as well. Hello Games disappeared for the better part of a year and a half and totally revamped it. And now it's actually doing what it was originally sold to do. You know, so, and plus we know that they're working on Elder Scrolls 6. So even though that's supposed to arrive after Starfield, the time and resources are still going to be split between that as well as supporting Fallout 76 currently. I agree with you. I definitely think we're going to see something at E3 2021. We know that parts of it are playable. You know, I think Jeff Keighley talked about it 2018. When he had a conversation with Todd Howard. So I don't think that the Microsoft purchase hurts the development. Like you said, I think it definitely helps more than hinder that opportunity. You know, the ability to throw more money and resources that Microsoft has at the project allows for Bethesda to maybe potentially be able to speed up development on the game. But at the end of the day, I think Bethesda slow plays this. I don't think we see this in 21. I think we see this in 22 simply because this game is how many years now in development? I mean, since we've known about it, you know, we're talking 10 plus 15, maybe years in development for this game in general. So I think they slow play this. I don't think they want to take the risk of another occurrence of what we saw happen, you know, with Cyberpunk and then, and with Fallout. I think they've learned their lessons. I think the gaming industry in general has learned their lessons. And I think they take their time. I think they say, you know what, we saw what happened, you know, especially with Cyberpunk and CD Projekt Red. I think we take our time, we do this right, because you only get one chance to make a good first impression. And for this to be the first super big title, their first AAA title after the acquisition, They want to limit the impact and the risk, not just to their brand, but also it's their risk to the acquisition by Microsoft. So I think they slow play this, and I think they release it in 22.
Yep, completely agree everything that you're saying, and I think that definitely plays into it. I just don't, there isn't an urgency from Xbox Game Studios to put this game out this year.
No way.
If anything, this holiday is all about Halo. It is. It's going to be all about Halo. Everything is going to be about Halo. It's Halo, Halo, Halo. You have Forza Horizon 5. We know Psychonauts 2 is coming. I think they'll be fine just doing that. I don't see the urgency to want to put Starfield out this holiday unless it is truly 100% ready to go. Todd Howard and those guys are confident it is everything they want it to be. But even if they need another month additional time, just give it to them. Just push it, like I said, push it into 2022, give them the time they need, get the proper polish and QA that it needs, because it sounds like this is going to be a very big, ambitious game. Like you said, it's been in development for X amount of years. Take your time. No one's screaming for Starfield in 2021. I think everyone would be more than happy to wait until 2022 to get that game, and we'll just go from there. I do think one interesting thing is, and I'll just throw it to you. Do you think this is still, quote unquote, cross-gen, or is it going to wind up being Series X / S only?
I think it's going to be new gen. I think it's going to be next generation. You're going to have to, you're only going to be able to play it on an S or an X. I think this game is too large in scale and scope. This is their first original IP in 25 years. And then on top of that, you throw the fact that this game is going to be set in space, which means the world, you know, you've got the entire universe and beyond
world, yeah.
Multi-universe, multi-worlds, all at your alleged fingertips. So think about it in that regard. And I don't want to compare it because it may not even be close to it, but you think of a game like Star Citizen that's basically been in production since 2010. That game's been in development limbo. I can't even say development limbo because it's been so well funded by its crowdsourcing initiative that, I mean, talk about since last year. I mean, there was like 200-300 million in development in crowdfunding since, you know, as of last year. Like, I'm sure it's more than that by now. But if you think about it in that regards, that is that same style multi in space RPG style, you know, you got trading and combat, et cetera. So if you take a game in, you know, if you compare those two titles in a sense, yeah. And Star Citizen still isn't out fully 100%. If you take that into consideration, Bethesda could essentially take another year on this, release it in 22, maybe even holiday 22. Probably won't, knowing the way they always release it, because it's ready to play next week. Boom, you can buy it now. So I think 22 is definitely the safe call for that. If it's 21, I mean, congrats, but I'm going to be very, very leery day one of playing that game.
Yeah, I mean, again, COVID world. I mean, everyone's working remote. Yeah, that's kind of my main factor in this. Again, we've already seen so many games get delayed, you know, out of 2021. It will surprise me if we're able to play. Look, good surprise, obviously. Again, I want to have the confidence that Microsoft has acquired all of Bethesda. There's no longer this pressure on Bethesda as an independent publisher that, oh, we got to have a holiday release. I ain't got to do anything, right? That's Microsoft's problem now. It's not their problem. So if they need more time, I'm pretty sure they're going to take it. If they don't, and it comes out, all right, see what you got. But the expectation will be there that we're getting a high-quality polished experience day one. Coming out buggy will not be acceptable anymore. I just think as gamers, we can't sit there and just allow another Fallout 76 fiasco. I mean, obviously, Bethesda's reputation over the years has been buggy releases. You're under Microsoft now. You have the resources. You will get the time that you need. Take it. And I'm sure they will. And this is why I'm saying all this. I'm pretty confident they will. So when the game does come out, I expect it to be high quality. So it'll be, again, this summer, man. We'll see when Xbox has their event how all this plays out. Excuse me. I swear to God, Danny is literally down there in Miami with a voodoo doll trying to kill my voice because it's been terrible this morning. But anyways, yeah, it'll be interesting to see, like I said, at the summer event, how all this plays out, what gets announced, what we see for release dates, all that, because it's time. It's time. Not having Halo last year clearly hurt, but we should be getting it this year. And let's close out this way, because I know we're getting close to wrapping up. Halo Infinite, we started with Halo, we'll end it with Halo. Am I crazy to say that Halo Infinite has to be, talk about review scores, but has to be a quote unquote 9 out of 10. It has to be, wow, this is game of the year contender type of thing. I can't believe complete revamp of the campaign. The multiplayer is knocking out apart. In your eyes, does Halo have to live up to that standard when it comes out this holiday?
I think if it doesn't blow my socks off with a strong 8, 8.5, even 9, there's going to be problems. I mean, there's so much
yes.
hype and expectation heaped upon the title in and of itself. You know, it's people say, you know, whether it's on social media or in, you know, Reddit, et cetera, that this is going to make or break Xbox. I don't know if it's that, if it's to that level. Now that we've got, I say we, but now that you've got games like Gears of War, Forza, that can help support it during its lean times. But the number of eyes that are going to be on this release, if it doesn't nail it, not just on launch, but in the next 6 to 9 months post-launch with, you know, with additional DLC and in-game, you know, in-game content, it's going to be rough waters and potentially something that it's going to be rough waters, especially for 343. Yeah, I think an 8.59, if it doesn't nail an 8.59 out the door day one, like we're talking, and that includes launch issues, like server issues. If there's like server issues with people unable to play for hours at a time, that first 48 to 72 hours, it's going to be a nightmare. It's not just in-game content. It's got to be that they've got to nail all, they've got to hit it on all cylinders, in my opinion.
I agree to a point. I think when it comes to the server issues and all that, that's usually forgivable because it's just demand at, you know, at day one. And again, we're talking Microsoft. You scale up all those Azure servers, have it ready to go. But yeah, that one I could excuse. I guess my standpoint, like I'm saying, is it better be the return of Master Chief to glory. It better be a return back to those Halo 2, Halo 3 days. It has to be, because if it's not, you're effectively killing the IP from being relevant anymore. And when I say relevant, I'm talking relevant that when I see Master Chief on screen, the crowd goes crazy. Everyone gets excited. It's going to be, okay, that again, you know, because it's been more than a time. Like, to me, Halo 4 was decent. It was I had no problem with Halo 4 personally. I know some people did. Halo 5, we already know, was a disaster from a campaign standpoint anyways. The Master Chief Collection, it took them years to finally get it to the place to where it is now. They cannot do that again with Halo Infinite. You've had more than enough time. By the time that game comes out, it's been 6 years since we've had a main Halo game, new Halo game. You have to nail this. And they know that. That's why they delayed it in the first place. They know. They know when they show that game again in June, they need to show updated lighting. They need to show that they've reduced, obviously, the load times, so not having all that pop-in happen. They need to show a new Brute, you know, model. Oh, Craig. You know, to show
I want the OG Craig, though. I want the OG
Craig. No. And I do, too. And I do, too. I think it's very important to keep Craig in the game as a funny meme, but the rest of those Brutes better be improved over Craig. Just they know it. This is why it was delayed. This is why they took an entire year, because they have to nail this. So let's see. Let's see. Like I said, we're only a few weeks away before we're going to see Halo Infinite again. And I'm excited. I'm going in positive. I'm going in thinking, yep, they know what they're doing. Some of the smartest people on the planet are over there at Microsoft. They understand the urgency to get this right. So I'm going in with an open mind that they are going to get it right. But if they don't, we'll address it at that point. And I will be disappointed. It will be a bummer to me, because I want Halo to be great. I do. I want it to be good. Just like I want Cyberpunk to be great, I want Halo to be great, right? So I would have the same level of disappointment that I had with Cyberpunk that I would with Halo if we have a repeat of what we had with that. So I hope they kill it. I hope they nail it. Really looking forward to it. But I think that's enough of Conspiracy Steve for one episode. And I realize we're coming up on time here. And I do also realize I never properly introduced the show as far as telling people, please go to gamertagradio.com. You can get the podcast there. You can get your favorite podcast app. We're on Spotify. We're everywhere. Download the show. We really appreciate it. And if you want to leave us any feedback, you can do it just like this. All right, Pete, I have one last thing before we get out of here. And I want to say it on the show proper, not an after show. Not that we got to deep dive into it today, but Invincible is probably, it might be, from what I've seen so far, it very well is the greatest superhero story ever told. I'm loving it that much.
Thank you.
This is, and I don't want to spoil it. I almost got into spoilery because I don't want to spoil it. I'll leave it vague like that. But where that, like, I walked into episode one knowing nothing, absolutely nothing about Invincible. Other than you saw hints coming up towards it. I know Greg Miller and all those guys were telling me things, but I knew nothing. And kind of like the Joker said in The Dark Knight, you change things forever by the end of episode one. I was like, wait, what? And just this journey I have been on for these 8 episodes it's phenomenal. It is phenomenal. Where they ended it at episode 8 just opens up so many possibilities on where they're going. And I know nothing. I haven't dived into the comic yet. I don't know nothing. But, thanks to a very generous person, you, I now have the whole set. That is my summer project. I'm not waiting on season 2 or season 3. I'm going all in. I got to know. I have to know. And I'm very excited. But it's phenomenal. It is. This was such a happy surprise for me. And it's ironic that this is on Amazon Prime. I mean, my God, between The Boys and Invincible, two things. Like, I just held off forever on The Boys. I watch it. And then I finally watched it. Oh, my God, this is incredible. Mm-hmm. And then Invincible. I'm like, oh, my God, this is amazing, too. So, yeah, dude, it's so good. So I just will recommend to anyone out there that is listening or watching this, if you have not watched Invincible on Amazon Prime yet, please do. All 8 episodes are available to stream right now. Don't let anybody spoil this for you. Watch it, consume it in real time, and not know what you're about to get into, because I'm telling you, you're in for a treat. You're in for a ride.
Yep. Yeah. So even as a comic book fan, I was on the slow train for Invincible. Me and my brother-in-law are really close, and we both, we're both, very, very big comic book collectors. And he's always been like, oh man, Invincible. Oh man, if I got to find this issue, I still haven't been able to find it. He's got figures, the whole nine. And I was always like, but why? Right. And about 2 years ago, I was like, you know what? Let me just dig in and let me see what Invincible was all about. And I got, volumes 1 through 3, and I devoured the first 2 in, I'd say, a day. I literally got them at like 10 in the morning, and at 10 at night, I was still there reading on my, I didn't right. leave my office. I literally was sitting in a chair, legs up, just like scrolling through the pages, and it was mind blowing. And I never thought that. And, having read comics for, basically my entire life, it was incredible the way that Robert Kirkman and the rest of the team just captured what it was like for Mark to just his path from high school into being Invincible. That whole story arc is possibly the greatest growing up story you could read. Because he deals with everything that teenagers literally deal with on a day-to-day basis, right? Whether it's girlfriend problems or your best friend's problems. It's such an amazing concept, right? Like, we all read comic books for that getaway experience of, disappearing from the real world. But the way that they capture and embrace that as a core component of who Mark Grayson is, right? If you haven't had, like Paris said, if you haven't had a chance to read or see this comic book, this cartoon, do yourself a favor. Do it. It's remarkably well done. Robert Kirkman has become one of those writers that now sits on my Mount Rushmore of comic book writers, along with Jonathan Hickman and some other greats. I won't get into those, but man. Like you said, Amazon's knocking it out of the park between The Boys and with Invincible, and I can't wait to see. And the next 2 seasons, they announced it this week. you know, you want next season. How about at seasons 2 and 3? We're already working on it. So that's fantastic. Yep. It's amazing. I love the journey. Whew, I can't wait. And I can't wait. Me, you, and Tony got to have a sit down.
Oh, yeah.
Tony Polanco at the Throwdown. Me, you, and him, we got to do this. Whether it's on Twitter Spaces or we revert back to the OG Clubhouse or we do something, we got to have a conversation about Invincible. It's amazing.
Completely agree. And with that, that will be the end of Gamertag Radio episode 1123. So again, Pete, thanks for joining me. You know, unfortunately Danny can't be here, but he's frolicking, you know, around South Florida, you know, probably drinking the mango smoothie and a voodoo doll trying to take my voice away, but that's okay. But no, obviously we miss Danny because it's actually been a minute since all three of us have mm-hmm. been on the show together. So we definitely got to correct that next week. But safe travels to Danny, Rihanna, love you both. And this has been a good episode. Always great talking with you, Pete.
Always.
To give my love to the family out there and hope everything is well.
Will do. Thank you.
Send us your feedback or questions. Give us a call at 786-273-7GTR. Email us at fanmail@gamertagradio.com or leave a message on speakpipe.com/gamertagradio.
All right, so that is it. This has been episode 1123 of Gamertag Radio. I'm Paris. That's Pete. And we'll see you guys real soon.
Thanks for listening to Gamertag Radio. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.